This is Dr. Jay Corsandi, and you're listening to The Best Night Ever, the show that's dedicated to helping you get your best night's sleep. Over the last 20 years of treating patients, I've worn many hats, including dentist, engineer, psychologist, artist, corporate executive, and more. I've found that the key to success, health, and longevity lies in sleep, and that's why I created this show. I want to teach you how to make sleep your best friend. Join me on a journey to uncover cutting-edge science, life-changing tips from renowned experts, ancient and modern sleep secrets, game-changing routines, and lifestyle hacks that will educate, inspire, and ultimately help you get the best night ever. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. Just a quick heads up. This episode is about sexual health, so we're going to throw out a lot of sex-related words. You might not want to have your kids listening in on this one. With that said, let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. But don't worry, I'm not going to give up my day job, but you guessed it, this show is all about sex. Well, more about sexual health, and we talk about skin health as well towards the end of the show. So who is someone that knows all about sexual health and skin optimization? Well, my guest today is Dr. Amy Killen. Amy is an anti-aging and regenerative medicine physician specializing in aesthetics and sexual medicine. She is board certified in emergency medicine with over 10 years of direct patient care, but she's been practicing anti-aging and regenerative medicine for more than 5 years. She's fellowship trained in anti-aging and regenerative medicine through the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine, aka A4M, and has done extensive additional training in aesthetics, platelet-rich plasma, which is PRP, stem cells, hair restoration, bioidentical hormones, nutrition, fitness, and sexual health. If you are into health and wellness and anti-aging and biohacking, you've probably heard her on numerous different podcasts. She's quite the popular guest, and I'm super excited to have her on this show to share her knowledge with you and me. Speaking of knowledge, she's going to drop some bombs on us on the show, and some of the things that we talk about include why mouthwash could be killing your sex life, the similarities and overlap between dentistry and airway management, which are things that I do, and what Dr. Amy does. A discussion of one of our most favorite molecules, nitric oxide. Why men lose their mojo as they get older. And how to use acoustic sound wave technologies to add more wood under the hood. So there is some hope, guys. We also talk about some cultural and religious ramifications when it comes to sexual health and optimization and the conversation around that. Lastly, we also talk about how to keep your skin looking great with some tips on things you should do and some things you should not do, and some more. As always, this show is brought to you by me and my new website, viasleep.com. It's viasleep.com. That's where I'm doing a lot more sleep coaching and telemed appointments these days. And if you or someone you know snores or has sleep apnea or has a CPAP machine or wants to take their sleep to the next level, you know, check out my new website, viasleep.com. You can email me directly at info@viasleep.com as well. You can also check out my sleep tips and all the latest in sleep gadgets at sleepbiohacker.com, which is my main site, or on Instagram at sleepbiohacker. Okay, folks, this is a fun conversation and not meant to be too heavy in a subject that can be controversial for some. I think it's worth your time to listen, and I'd love to hear what you think about it. And with that said, off we go. Okay, we are live. Amy, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I guess before we get into everything, what's new and exciting? What's going on for you right now that you just want to share?
You know, I don't have anything especially new, except that I've been really busy with full body stem cell makeover patients up in Park City with my partner, Dr. Adelson. So we've been seeing so many patients from all over the world, which has been pretty exciting. And then I have a couple of other business ventures that I've been involved with, but we're kind of early stages in those.
Okay. Yeah. We'll have to talk about the full body stem cell procedure as well too, but I was doing research for this show and I was trying to think, okay, what am I, a dentist that focuses on airway and sleep disorders, have in common with an ER physician that's gone into sexual health? And I was stumped for a while, but the more I thought about it, I was like, the more we have in common. I mean, we both started out in healthcare fields that are totally different than what we're doing now. We both treat people's problems that happen in the bedroom. We both deal with nitric oxide. We both use a technology derived from vaginal rejuvenation, and you rejuvenate vaginas. So it's like, oh my God, I inject Botox, you inject Botox. I'm like, the similarities are crazy. So
yeah, we're like the same people.
Same people, different location, but same people. Yeah. So cool. I guess, yeah, let's wind back a bit too, just to kind of learn your journey from what you were doing to what you're doing now.
Yeah. So I was emergency medicine trained. That's how my residency was in ER. And I did another 7 years after that, working in busy emergency departments in Texas and Austin, actually, which was fabulous. You know, loved the job for a while. But then towards the end of that, I had twins, and then I had another child like 20 months later. So I had three kids within 2 years. And my husband was actually working out of state at the time. So I was sort of this like lone caregiver to these three kids under the age of two. And I was working full time in the ER, you know, getting up at 3:30 in the morning to go to work every day. And that takes its toll. And after a while, I started realizing that I wasn't healthy. I wasn't eating well. I wasn't exercising. I was always stressed. I wasn't sleeping at all. And, you know, wasn't showing up in the best way for my family. And then I also kind of started noticing the same moment that I had all these patients that would come into the ER and they were just like me. Like, they didn't have necessarily acute problems. Some of them did, but, you know, a lot of them were chronic medical problems that was because they were struggling to kind of survive in their life. Like, they're just overstressed and overworked and, you know, weren't making good choices and all of that. So I kind of realized that in order to help them and me, I needed to shift my focus and get out of the ER and start learning about, you know, integrative health and regenerative medicine and things like that. So that's how it started. I did that for a little while, just kind of general hormone therapy and such, and started having a lot of patients that were asking me about how I could help them with their sexual health or their skin health. I had a lot of skin questions and sex questions. And over time, I was like, you know, there actually are a lot of really cool things out there that we can do in this kind of integrative and regenerative space for both skin and sex that people aren't talking about. So I started focusing on those two kind of wildly different but kind of similar fields. And that's what I do now.
Okay. Skin and sex. I want to touch upon a couple of those as well as we go through the show here. In my practice, I've seen the majority of my patients, and I tell people, is men 40 and over and women 50 and over, at least when it comes to sleep disorders. And I think your demographic is probably similar, but you see a whole different slew of chief complaints. So what are the things people are coming to see you for?
So I do, yeah, I see a lot of sexual dysfunction, men, it's erectile dysfunction, which usually, you know, it starts anytime, but I see men generally over the age of 40. That's when we start seeing, you know, lowering of testosterone levels. And then we also just start seeing problems with the sort of the health of the penis itself. And so I see a lot of guys in that age group. And then, yeah, I think for women, it's about the same, about, you know, mid 40s or so, certainly postmenopausal women, once they hit, you know, 50, 55, depending on the person, and you have all those hormone fluctuations, can cause a lot of sexual dysfunction. So, you know, anything from, you know, lack of arousal to difficulty with orgasm to, you know, lack of responsiveness. Like, there's kind of a lot of different things that I see, but using these integrative and regenerative kind of stem cells and integrative medicine to treat these patients has been a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I always tell people too, you know, especially for guys 40 and over, testosterone drops as well. Why do you think it's happening, or why is it happening at a more accelerated rate these days versus years before? Why are men, and especially in sperm count as well too? I've seen a lot of research that, you know, guys are just losing it left and right. So what's going on?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of things. You're totally right. The testosterone levels of men in our population now is significantly lower than even 50 years ago. And I think it's a lot of things. I think it's, you know, testosterone is going to be higher in men who are more physically active, who are exercising, you know, getting up and moving around, and we're much more sedentary than we used to be. Testosterone is going to be lower generally in people who are obese. And of course, we're becoming more and more obese as a society. There are also a lot of endocrine disruptors out in the environment, you know, things we put in our food, plastics, you know, different chemicals that can affect the endocrine system, of course, which is going to affect testosterone. We're sleeping less and less, or at least not getting good sleep. And testosterone is made at nighttime primarily. And so that's another reason. You know, there's all these reasons, but most of them, I think, have to do with our lifestyle and the choices that we're making.
Yeah. I hear some people in our wellness space also throw out Wi-Fi as well and EMF and things like that. So
yeah, I've heard that as well. I haven't seen the data behind that, but I have heard people talk about it.
I have a pair of EMF underwear just in case.
Yeah, I got sent some EMF underwear as well. I haven't tried them yet, but I will do that.
Another thing that I see when people come see me for sleep problems, and I think there's overlaps in this entire conversation we're going to have today, is nitric oxide. I guess, can you tell people a little bit who don't know or aren't familiar with it, what it is and how it works. And you'd be surprised, you know, a lot of the males that I see that come in and complain about snoring or sleep apnea are also saying, hey, you know, the plumbing isn't working down there as well. And that's yeah. And part of the intake forms. You mean you could see, and they never check it off on erectile dysfunction, but right. They'll admit to me, you know, on the side, they'll say, hey, you know, things aren't working. Or the flip side is once we start getting them sleeping better and obviously oxygenating better and getting that nitric oxide, they come back and go, oh my God, things are so much better. So, yeah, so what's going yeah. on there?
So it's so important. I love nitric oxide. Nitric oxide is the main chemical messenger, as you know, that tells your blood vessels to vasodilate, to open up and let the blood flow in to all different parts of the body. We need it for everything. But it's really important for sexual health because that's the chemical that tells your penis, like, let the blood in and let's keep it there for a while. And so as we get older, we make less and less nitric oxide. One of the ways it's made is actually in the blood vessel lining. So as we get older and we develop atherosclerosis, you can't make as much nitric oxide. And so, you know, by the time you're 40, you're making about half as much as you were when you were 20. And that number just goes down, 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 down. So that's important. You can get nitric oxide from food. There are some other different pathways in making it, but we know that we just make less and less of it. So one of the main causes of erectile dysfunction in men and sexual dysfunction in women probably as well is lack of nitric oxide. And when you have medications like Viagra and Cialis and things like that, you know, they work by preventing the breakdown of your own nitric oxide. So it stays around longer, right? But if you don't have enough of your own nitric oxide to start with, then those medications don't even work for you. Like, you know, you can keep it around longer, but if it's not there to begin with, it's not helping. So you would know more than anyone about sort of the mechanism behind breathing and how breathing in your nose affects your nitric oxide levels, which I think is a fascinating thing.
Oh yeah. So, and there's a big dental connection as well too with mouthwashes as well, which people yes. don't know about. And I'm starting to kind of preach that, but you want to share people?
It's my favorite. Yeah. I think that Listerine is probably going to come after me in a lawsuit at some point, but we know that, you know, so you can get nitric oxide from food. If you eat foods that are high in nitrates, which are generally the things that are best are like green leafy vegetables and beets and citrus foods and pomegranate and things like that, that have a lot of nitrates in them. But the foods themselves have to be converted into nitric oxide. And that happens kind of in two steps. The first step happens in your mouth. So you have nitrate reducing bacteria, sort of these healthy, good bacteria in your mouth. And their job is to take the nitrates in food and reduce it to nitrite. And then you swallow that and it goes in your stomach. And then the stomach acid, if you have enough stomach acid, which a lot of us don't, but if you do have a really acidic, you know, good acidic stomach, the stomach acid does the second step, which is converting the nitrite to nitric oxide. So people who are using antiseptic mouthwashes and they're killing their bacteria in your mouth, including those good bacteria, they actually can have increased problems with erectile dysfunction, high blood pressure, you know, all kinds of other things just from your mouthwash, which is crazy. And no one tells you that.
And that's the benefit of listening to the show and people like you, because you get to hear kind of crazy things like this, but they make sense. And I totally get it as well too. Have you heard of red light therapy being a nitric oxide agonist as well too, or infrared?
Mm-hmm. I've seen some literature on that. Red light therapy or even sunlight can increase nitric oxide in your body. So getting out and getting a little bit of sun. I also am really, you know, I do a lot of skin health. So I talk a lot about, you know, wearing sunblock, at least for your face and neck and places that get, you know, that really don't, you don't want to have a lot of photo aging. But I do think that the sun is a powerful, in a good way, something that helps us in a lot of ways in our health, and nitric oxide is one of them.
So I want to talk a little bit more about sexual health, because it's something I haven't talked about on my podcast, and you're one of the top experts. So, and you've mentioned six pillars of health before in some shows that I've listened to as well. How does healthy sex life come into play in the big picture?
So I like talking about sex because it's something that people don't talk about, but it is actually this integral part of, you know, all dimensions of our health. So we know that a healthy sex life is going to affect everything from mental, emotional health to your social relationships and social health to your physical health, which we can talk about some of those links here. You know, it affects all of those things. It's not just about, you know, your sexual organs. It actually kind of overflows into all different other kinds of health. So, you know, we know from different studies that have been done, you know, for instance, people who are sexually active tend to have less anxiety and depression. They tend to have higher self-confidence, which is good, and less, they actually have better sleep also. There's a big tie-in with sleep and sex. People who have a sort of a more healthy sex life tend to have lower blood pressure. They tend to have, you know, less anxiety. They tend to have less cardiovascular disease. There are even studies that have at least shown an association anyway between better sex lives and lower mortality in men over a 10-year period. Men who had sex more regularly had, you know, they had lower mortality rate than the ones who didn't. There's association with telomeres, you know, longer telomeres in women who are more sexually active. And then there's a social component, which is really important. You know, I have obviously a lot of patients that I see come to see me because of sexual dysfunction. And the thing that they complain about is that they feel like disconnected, you know, from their partner. And that sort of social disconnection and loneliness, you know, we know now, especially after going through COVID, that loneliness is, you know, it kills as many people in this world as obesity and alcohol use and some of these other things. And so I think that part of it is something that people don't talk about, but that sex helps kind of bring people a little closer together and not feel quite as lonely, which I think is actually really important.
Yeah, you make a good point. You know, as far as just me personally growing up, I went to an Orthodox Jewish school where boys and girls were separated. Mm-hmm. And then obviously when you get into and went to public high school where sex ed was just, you know, basically wear a condom, don't get an STD, don't get AIDS.
Right.
That was it. So there are, I'm sure you see a lot of people that have deep-seated, you know, cultural or religious viewpoints. And how do you kind of navigate that in the patients you see or in your practice?
Yeah. So I'm in Utah. I have a lot of, you know, I have a lot of LDS Mormon patients, and certainly that, you know, a lot of these patients have been taught, you know, that sex is not bad, or it's bad in certain situations, or you should only do it a certain way, or, you know, you shouldn't touch yourself. And there's all kinds of rules. And I think that's true across probably all religions. There's certain, you know, some teachings that sometimes are not super favorable to sexual expression. And so obviously I have to be, you know, I want to be respectful of people and their beliefs, but I also think it's important to know that, you know, we're all human, like every single one of us is human, and it's okay to talk about these things. In fact, if you don't, I think that's where you start to have stigmas attached and you start to have, you know, a lot of trauma around it and problems with it. And if we could just be a little bit more open about, you know, kind of how it all works and how to keep everything working well and what we can do to be healthier long-term, I think that we'd actually all be a lot happier.
Got it. So I'm a guy. I want to talk about the penis. When guys come to see you, I guess the chief problem is going to be erectile dysfunction. Is that?
Yeah, okay. That's the most common thing. You know, I get some patients with other concerns, but ED is the most common by far and the most treatable thing that I see.
So let's talk about treatment. So what are some options if a guy comes and says, you know, I've got some issues down there, what do we do?
So it depends, you know, first of all, obviously history and physical and kind of talk about what's going on. But a couple of things, I like to look at their hormone levels for sure. You know, making sure that testosterone, you know, is high enough and estrogen is not too high. And, you know, and some of the other hormones are important as well. But testosterone is the big one, as we talked about earlier. And that goes down as with the age. You know, testosterone is interesting because we used to think that it was just important for like libido, for like sexual interest, you know, interest in sex. But we found actually that men who have chronically low testosterone, that actually affects the health of the smooth muscle cells within the penis. So the smooth muscle cells are usually the cells within the corpus cavernosum, the tubes that kind of fill the penis with blood. Those cells are supposed to be like, you know, elasticy, thus the name. And what happens with time, if you have a lot of inflammation or if you have low testosterone for a long time, those cells can actually get replaced by either fat tissue or scar tissue. And so all of a sudden you have these tubes that can't fill as much with blood. They can't expand as much because you've lost these elastic cells. And that, you know, that problem with expansion is actually one of the main reasons that people can't keep erections, because if you can't expand enough, then you can't press against the veins on the outside and occlude the veins. And so the blood just rushes back out again. And that's called venous leak, which is actually not a vein problem. It's a smooth muscle cell problem. And low testosterone is actually one of the causes of that, which I think people don't even know about.
That's
amazing.
One
thing. Yeah, I know. So testosterone is important. Just general, you know, healthy living obviously is super important because we know that lack of blood flow is one of the main causes of ED. So, you know, anything that you can do to minimize atherosclerosis and cardiovascular disease, whether that's, you know, eating right, sleeping, avoiding smoking, you know, avoiding diabetes, like all the things that your grandmother told you to do, like that's also good for your penis.
Wow.
And then as far as if you already have ED, there's a few things that could be really effective. Shockwave therapy, you know, Gainswave is the sort of a national network of doctors who do this shockwave therapy on the penis. And that's something that I've been doing for probably 4 years or so at this point, but really effective. You do a series of treatments in the doctor's office, usually, and they're like 30 minutes and non-invasive. And it's basically sending these high intensity sound waves into the penis. And the sound waves kind of start this cascade of events that ends with increased stem cell recruitment, increased blood vessel formation. So you get better blood flow over time. You get increased local nitric oxide production, which again, obviously important. And so over time, you can actually significantly improve ability to get erections and hardness of erections and, you know, and sensation and all kinds of things just from doing this sort of non-invasive treatment. Then there are actually some home devices out there now too. The Phoenix has a home device that just came out in the last year that at least my patients seem to like. And then, you know, another step beyond that is things like injections, PRP injections into the penis, platelet-rich plasma, exosomes, stem cells, some of these other biologics where I basically just inject, you know, do a little tiny injection right into those corpus cavernosum tubes. And over time, you can have some regenerative improvements in that tissue. So those are some of the things that we start with.
Wow. Okay. Lots to unpack there. But yeah, it's funny because thinking about commonalities, you know, I've done PRP as well too for patients with dental surgeries as well. We'll do a blood draw, we'll spin it, and then we'll use it on the grafts. But yeah, so many commonalities here.
I know.
Okay. A couple questions just to kind of rewind on these things that you covered. If a guy's having ED issues, is it something that's more of an acute thing? Like one day they just say it stops working? Or is it like more of a chronic thing? And then they just get to the point where they say, you know what, enough is enough. I need to get this checked out.
It's usually chronic. If it is acute, there's probably something else going on. You know, if it's really acute, like it just worked one day and not the next, then you know, obviously think about psychological causes. And that's very real. You have to, you know, your sex drive starts in your brain. And that your erection starts in your brain. Like it all starts in your brain. And so if something has happened, whether, you know, a stress, a confidence issue, too much porn use, like something like that can certainly make your brain not engage. And that can be a reason for it. But usually it's going to be kind of chronic, just less and less function kind of over, you know, 5 years, 10 years. And then at some point you're just like, oh my gosh, how did I get here? So, yeah.
And do you find it more prompted by the guys or by their partners?
It's usually the men themselves that will come in to see me. Although interestingly enough, when I have women patients, sometimes a lot of times it's their partners who push them in to see me. So, it's kind of like you said, like a lot of times I'll do visits, you know, at least when I was in the beginning, before I was focused on this, I would do just general medical visits, you know, talking about hormones and medical, you know, just general health. And I would always ask about sexual health, but people didn't usually admit to it unless I started like digging in, like, you know, tell me more about your erections. Tell me more. And then they would finally be like, okay. And then they would finally like actually tell me more. But people, you know, obviously people are, it's a sensitive subject.
Yes, it is. And speaking of that too, okay. And sorry, I'm sticking on the subject for a while here, but I'm just super curious. But let's say a guy is coming. Okay. Well, let's rewind. Historically, the, you know, OBGYN field was dominated by men, and women had developed a certain level of comfort seeing a man for those types of needs. You've kind of flipped things upside down because you're a fairly young, attractive female, and these guys are coming in with the most sensitive issues. How is that dynamic? You know, obviously you're basically handling men's penises.
You know, I think that certainly people are nervous at first. That's, I think, very common. But a lot of my patients have seen me on things. Like they see me on podcasts or they see me do talks. And so they know that I'm really comfortable talking about this. Like to me, it's not a big deal. It's just this interesting system in our body that we can, you know, try to improve. I think that after speaking to me for a little while, that men will generally understand that it's not a big deal. We're just going to talk about it. Like we're just going to use regular words. Like it's just going to be fine. And then when they come to actually see me, hopefully that carries over into the procedure. You know, the procedures themselves, you know, I numb my patients up or put them to sleep. So they're actually not painful or problematic. You know, it's not a big deal. It just seems like it should be a big deal before you go into it.
Got it. Okay. You mentioned a couple other therapies I just want to touch on real quick, stem cells and exosomes and PRP. Maybe give people a quick idea how what those are and how they work and how you can apply them both for men or women, I guess. Let's move over to some vaginas as well, too.
Yeah, let's do. So the PRP, as you know, platelet-rich plasma, that just coming from your blood, we're spinning it, we're getting the platelets and isolating them, concentrating them, and then injecting them. So in women, I'm going to be injecting into the sort of anterior vaginal wall, which is like kind of like the G spot, like just below the urethra, as well as the clitoris. And then in men, I'm going to be injecting into the shaft, like I said, before the corpus cavernosum. And then oftentimes I'll also do kind of the base of the head of the penis, like the corona it's called. So you can inject PRP. The other things, you can also inject sort of other biologics. So stem cells, we tend to use stem cells from the patient. So we put patients to sleep usually. We'll do like a bone marrow aspiration or do like a little mini liposuction and get stem cells that way. And then we isolate the stem cells, the mesenchymal stem cells, which are the ones that are going to be the most active in this area. And then we'll just inject those stem cells, you know, again, you know, in the same places in women or men. And then another option that we can use are exosomes. Exosomes are these little kind of tiny messenger bubbles, I call them. They're released by stem cells, and we get ours from umbilical cord placental tissue, like healthy tissue from full-term babies that goes to a lab. But these stem cells will release these exosomes, which have within them growth factors as well as messenger RNA and microRNA. And essentially, the exosomes can kind of float around and they get taken in by your own stem cells, and it can change the way your stem cells behave. So with all of these, like it all sounds confusing, but basically the main mechanism is that whether we're using PRP or stem cells or exosomes, what we're trying to do is get your own stem cells, the ones that are already there living in that tissue, to become more active again, to create, you know, to produce more, whatever it is, collagen, more blood flow, more smooth muscle cells, more, you know, nerve regeneration. Because as we know, our own stem cells become less active as we get older. So if we can kind of like give them a kick in the pants to activate them with some of these biologics, then they can do their job better.
Is there any issues with like regulatory things with these stem cells and exosomes or state by state? Or I don't know the landscape right now.
Yeah, there are definitely regulatory things coming down the pipe. In the FDA keeps pushing it, but I think it's now May of this year, which is pretty soon. Unless we hear otherwise, we have to stop using fat-derived stem cells. We can still use bone marrow, but we can't use fat, because the FDA has basically said that if you take someone's fat and you get their stem cells from their fat, but you put their own stem cells back in their own body,
turned it into a drug or something.
That you've turned it into a drug, and then if it's a drug, that they get to regulate it. And so even though there's been a lot of pushback from people who say, wait a second, we've been taking organs out of people's bodies and putting them back in for years. We've been taking, you know, bone marrow stem cells out and putting them back, and blood out and putting them back. But for some reason, if you take fat out and you put it back in a different way, then people don't like that.
I think we need to open up a practice in like Mexico or Costa Rica or Panama. Yeah.
That's why people are there. Yeah, one of the other things you can't do in the U.S. and we haven't been able to do for a long time is you can't take someone's stem cells out and then expand them in culture. Like you can't grow them in petri dishes and then put them back in that patient. So, you know, people who have like these awful sort of systemic diseases, you know, Parkinson's disease or Alzheimer's disease or MS or things like that, if stem cells are effective, which they seem to be in some patients, they would tend to need multiple doses. And so it'd be great if you could, you know, take out your cells, culture expand them and put them back in, or use like umbilical cord stem cells, culture expand them and have many, many more cells to put in. But in the US, we are not allowed to culture expand stem cells and then put them back in a patient. So people do travel out of the country because of that.
I'm telling you, destination holiday medical tourism. Yeah. Although these days with this whole, you know, pandemic stuff is just such a mess, which is frustrating.
Yeah, I know. I haven't even thought about that, but you're right. Like there's a lot of patients who were regularly going down to, you know, to Panama or Costa Rica or other places to get these procedures done. People who have chronic diseases, and they go like a couple of times a year or whatever to get them done. And I guess you just haven't been able to go this last year, which is awful.
Yeah. So if people want to see you for fat stem cells, they need a book. quickly.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't even realize it. It's coming up very fast. And there's a lot of pushback on using exosomes too. A lot of the exosome companies do have investigational new drug. The FDA have given them sort of these INDs to be able to go out and start studying these treatments. And so hopefully we'll get some FDA approval for exosomes soon, but it still may be a few years away. And if we don't, then they may come down on those as well.
I mean, I hit a roadblock just last week and I was looking to get to some peptides and I called up a couple pharmacies and I said, oh, I'm in LA, I'm in California. Sorry, we don't ship there. Are you using peptides in your practice?
I use some of the hair restoration peptides like PTD, DBM, and valproic acid. I use like GHK copper for skin. I use, you know, zinc thymulin. I also use PT141, which of course is for sexual health. And that's a great one. That's good for men and women. And is actually just got FDA approved for to be a, you know, pharmaceutical drug for women with sexual dysfunction. So that is available whether they shut down the compounding pharmacies or not. But yeah, you're right. It's hard to get peptides now. And the pharmacies that, you know, that I used to go to, they're stocking fewer and fewer of the ones that I want to buy because the FDA has come in and said, you can't do that.
Man. Okay. So I got one more question about penises and then I want to talk about some vaginas, but so my cousin's a urologist. So, I mean, this has been around me my whole life, and I remember growing up early in his career, he would tell me about these penis implant surgeries. So Is that still a thing or is that more of an old school, just kind of like a crutch type thing? Or have you dealt with guys who've had it and said it didn't work or they want to upgrade or what are your thoughts on that?
It is still a thing for sure. And I'm not a urologist. I don't do those surgeries, but when they do that, they basically have to kind of scoop out the corpus cavernosum. So those two tubes that fill with blood, that's how you get an erection. If you have no ability to get erections, no matter what, like you've tried Viagra, you've tried injections, you've tried, you know, everything, then a prosthetic or penis, like an implant can be put in. But once it's in, because they scoop out those cells that are the erectile cells, you can't really go back from that. So I actually had one guy a few years ago at this point, probably 4 years ago, who was a prostate cancer survivor, you know, mid 50s, really healthy guy, but had prostate cancer, had to have surgery. And then since that surgery had been unable to have an erection at all. Like he tried everything. He'd gone to all the urologists and he came to see me because he was just like, I don't really want a, you know, a penile implant, but I don't know what else to do. Can we like just try some things. And this was pretty early when I was just starting to use stem cells. I wasn't even using exosomes at the time, just stem cells and PRP, but I did a stem cell and PRP injection. And then we did some of the shockwave therapy, the Gainswave. We did like, I think 12 treatments and got his testosterone up. And he called me about 4 months later. And he said that he had had sex with his wife for the first time in 4 years. And he was, you know, it was incredible. Like he was just like, he was so happy. And what's interesting about that story is that he was, you know, he was happy, his wife was happy, but he said what he wasn't expecting was how this sort of newfound vigor, if you will, was actually affecting his work. Because he was this like business guy and he owned a company and, you know, did all these things. And he was like, all of a sudden I have like all this confidence that I'm like, you know, like I didn't even realize that was gone until it came back, which I thought was really interesting.
Wow. Yeah. We're both saving marriages because I deal with couples that are obviously snoring and sleep apnea. And once we're able to solve that, it's like, not only is that, you know, nuisance gone, but yeah, the vitality, the vigor goes up and everybody wins. Everybody's happy. So I totally get it.
We're the same.
We got to open a practice in Panama. Let's go.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
We can cover top to bottom, you know?
That's right.
Yeah. So what was I going to ask you? You threw me off. But for women, when they come to see you, you know, I can understand the male perspective just because that's what the equipment that I have. But for women, when they come to see you, what are some of the chief complaints or ways that they can get optimized as well? I know you mentioned a few of the things. So are they talking about urinary incontinence? Are they talking about dryness, pain on sex, you know, loss of libido? I guess it's a combination of bioidentical hormones and all the procedures you talk about.
Yeah, exactly. It's all those things. It's, you know, again, women usually kind of in the 10 years before menopause and then after menopause. So you've got, you know, got all these hormone fluctuations happening. So we'll do a lot of hormone therapy at one of my practices. And then, you know, things like, dryness, discomfort, stress urinary incontinence, like you mentioned, is a big one. That's, you know, when you cough or sneeze and you kind of pee a little bit, which happens to, you know.
My wife does not want to go on the trampoline that we have outside no matter what I do. She's which is like, I got to cross my legs when I jump up and down. And it's terrible. Yeah. It's frustrating. Yeah.
Yeah. It is. We have a trampoline too. We just got it last year and my kids are always asking me to go out there. And I'm always like, can I go? Okay, I can go. But it's a big problem. But there are actually a lot of these things, you know, the lasers that we have available, like the vaginal lasers and vaginal radio frequency devices could be great for stress urinary incontinence to kind of help build up the tissue underneath the urethra. There's some home devices that I like a lot that I'll give to patients. Like there's some pelvic floor TENS devices that, you know, are essentially that they're like a TENS device, like the, you know, trans electrical nerve stimulation that you put on your muscles that like contract your muscles. But they have those that are intravaginal. So you essentially put this device inside and it contracts the inside. So it contracts your pelvic floor muscles, almost like Kegels, but like powerful Kegels. And those are great for people who just, you know, can't do Kegels, aren't remembering to do them, you know, whatever. There's intravaginal red light therapy.
I was going to say, I saw that kind of dildo looking thing with the red lights inside it. Yeah.
Which is great. I've left that. I have one of those. I leave it on my nightstand occasionally. And I think that like random people who come in my room are probably like, what's going on over here?
What's that red flashlight thing?
But that's a great tool. It's super easy to use. And you could, it's a home device. You know, use it a few times a week and it's very comfortable and it can increase blood flow and collagen formation and help with lubrication and sensation and things like that. And then of course, the same kind of thing, the injectables that we do that I talked about before for men can be helpful for women as well. So, you know, depending on whether it's like just lack of sensation, problems with orgasm, problems with, you know, libido, SUI, any of those things can potentially be helped with these therapies.
Got it. All right, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about skin. But first, I want to say, how did you kind of combine these two together? Because they seem, you know, kind of totally separate.
Yeah.
Well,
because it was two things. First of all, because that's what patients asked me about. Like they would say, like, once I kind of got them over their initial, like, I'm trying to survive and like I'm not sleeping and I'm not eating and I'm not, you know, I'm gaining weight and all this. Like once we kind of got over that sort of first struggle, they'd come back to me and they would ask me for help with either skin, like, you know, can you help me not age as fast, or sex. And so I was getting these same two kind of categories over and over. And what I realized, it's kind of like talking to you, what I realized is that there's so much overlap in the things that cause dysfunction, in the things that cause rapid aging, and in the treatments for both our skin and our sexual systems. And so because of that, you know, the same therapies that I use for the vagina and the penis, I can use for your face, which sounds crazy, but it's, you know, it's things like light therapy, red light therapy, lasers. It's things like the regenerative injections, like the stem cells, the PRP, the exosomes, hormones. You know, estrogen is really important for skin health. In fact, women, when they lose estrogen after menopause, and men as well, but when you lose your estrogen, that's one of the key things that starts to break down your skin. So you have this rapid aging of your skin in those first 5 years after menopause. And people don't know that, like, that there are actually things you can do. You can do topical estrogens or you can take estrogen therapy, and that can really help with your skin health. So there's a lot of this overlap. So that's why it happened.
I love it. One of the other overlaps is Botox as well too. I was injecting it for TMJ and grinding and headaches and things like that. People in the wellness space tend to be very leery of anything that has the word toxin associated with it, but I'm pretty comfortable with it. What are your thoughts?
I think that everything's a toxin in the wrong dose, and that I don't love the term toxin in general. I think it's overused. I think that, you know, water is a toxin if you drink too much of it. I mean, it's literally, it's dose dependent. And so you can't talk about toxins if you don't talk about doses. But in terms of Botox, I definitely am a fan, and people who, I think it works great. I think it's safe. And the, you know, we, as far as we know, there are no long-term issues with it. And we should know at this point there, you know, hundreds of thousands of people have gotten Botox injections, but I'm also fine. You know, I also have a lot of patients who don't want to put, you know, put those things in their body and don't like the way it looks. And I think that's great too. I think it's just up to every person to decide what they're comfortable with.
Over the years, as I've seen so many patients that come in with sleep issues, I've learned, and when you talk to them, you know, they'll tell you what they're doing and what they're not doing. I've learned a lot of things not to do in order to get better sleep. It's kind of just do the opposite. So considering all the patients you've seen, what are some trends that people come in and say that they're doing that you're like, you shouldn't do, or things that you could recommend to do to avoid seeing you in the first place?
That's a great question. I haven't got that one before. Things that they're not doing with skin, you know, a lot of people are not wearing sunblock, which I think is really important.
Well, that goes back to that whole toxin thing too, because I know a lot of people in this space, they're going to say, don't put that on your face. Your skin's going to absorb it. You know?
Yeah. But you can do, so there's sunblock and there's sunscreen. Sunscreen is the chemical, you know, the chemicals that essentially are bad for the coral reefs and maybe bad for, you know, other things. Sunblock is like zinc, you know, zinc oxide, titanium dioxide, and those just sit on top of your skin. So unless you get like a nano formulation of one of those things, they're not really getting absorbed. And, you know, again, it's a choice, but I will tell you that the sun is the number one cause of skin aging. It's the thing that is causing most of your aging in your face and your, you know, on your skin that's exposed to the sun. So if that's a concern for you, if you don't want to age as fast, then the thing to do is to wear sunblock and a hat or, you know, whatever. What I tell people is, you know, at least put sunblock on your face, you know, your chest, maybe the backs of your hands. And then if you want to go outside otherwise naked and walk around in the sun, you know, for 20 minutes, that's actually probably good. You know, we know that there's some good data behind sun and how important it is for you, but it does cause aging. The other thing I think in this world, people are a little bit afraid of like the retinoids for skin, because again, they think it's a dangerous toxin, which again, not proven to be the case, and tons of evidence that retinoids are one of the best things you can do to slow skin aging. So that's, you know, that's everything from the over-the-counter retinols to the prescription, you know, tretinoins and other retinoids that you can get from doctors. But I think absolutely if you're over the age of 30 or so and you care about your skin, then you should be applying sunblock every day. You should be applying a retinoid at night, and then, you know, some good antioxidants like vitamin C and vitamin E, and there's tons of different ones, resveratrol topically, any kind of like antioxidant topically in the morning is a good call as well. So those are my things for skin. I think that there's a lot of cool natural things out there for skin, and I'm all for all of those things, but there's some other things that are maybe not natural, but still safe that can be really effective.
What about for sexual health? What are people doing that they shouldn't be doing, or what can they do to, again, avoid coming to see you in the first place?
That one's hard. So, you know, the biggest thing, most of my patients are pretty healthy. Most of them have read up enough, and they know enough to kind of know what they should and shouldn't be doing. Smoking is a big one, which I don't think most of our audience is probably smoking, but I always used to tease that because smoking is a huge cause of erectile dysfunction, you know, because it wreaks havoc on your blood vessels and mm-hmm. causes both vasoconstriction, like in the short term, and then long term, you know, causes atherosclerosis. I used to joke that I feel like the cigarette boxes, instead of having like a little bitty warning at the bottom about, you know, lung disease or whatever, it should just have a big picture of a flaccid penis on the front of it.
I love it. Yeah.
Like if men saw that flaccid penis on their cigarette, you know, container, then they would be much less likely to buy those cigarettes and smoke them every day because they're just awful for you.
That's a deterrent. Yeah, for sure. I mean, people will do whatever they can to preserve their sexual abilities.
You know, for women, I don't see it a lot in my patients, but I think younger women get told by messaging that they need to be doing like, you know, special soaps or douches, or like should be putting different things inside their vagina to clean it, which is kind of nonsense. Like it's a self-cleaning machine. You don't have to do anything for it. So I think that there's some messaging in younger women, especially that is something they should be doing. But I'm hoping that by the time we're a little older, that most of us are not as worried about that.
Got it. So obviously my show is called Best Night Ever. I always like to throw in some sleep stuff in here or there. Do you have any tips that you give your patients or the listeners here, or a routine that works for you? What are your thoughts on optimizing sleep?
I do like to sleep. Going to bed at the same time every night-ish is pretty important for me, and making sure that my bed is cool. I have like a chili pad Uller. I have the Uller device mm-hmm. that keeps it nice and cool. I do complete darkness. I wear like a sleep mask even in my house every night because I like this total darkness. And then I oftentimes will do melatonin. I like melatonin for its sort of anti-inflammatory properties, you know, as well as sleep.
That's just like testosterone, because a lot of people think melatonin is just a sleep hormone. But when you dig deeper, you see, oh my God, it's got a huge, you know, antioxidant potential as well too.
It does. Yeah. It was interesting. Some of the studies that were coming out during COVID and looking at, you know, high dose melatonin to potentially help with that. But yeah, I like melatonin a lot, and I don't tend to do the phones and TVs and things at least an hour before bed, which, you know, or if I do, I just make sure it's in like dark mode. Those are kind of my main things, you know, just kind of the normal, get to bed on time and try to stay there, not use your phone mostly overnight.
Keep it simple, right?
Keep it simple. Yep.
So this has been a great discussion, by the way, and I'm having so much fun. I know we got to wrap it up soon, but I guess kind of what would be like an overall kind of a global picture that you could say, you know, things that you've seen or heard in the past regarding, you know, just the topic of sexual health, some of the stigmas, some of the challenges, what people could consider when they listen to the show, or just kind of future, if they're listening to the show, they're saying, this stuff sounds interesting. What would you kind of throw at them as kind of bigger thoughts or closing thoughts or final thoughts?
I'm a big proponent of making sexual health something that we can all talk about on any podcast or any dinner table or any, you know, at any conversation that we have without feeling like it's that big of a deal. Like, let's talk about it like we do bone health or brain health or cardiovascular health or any other kind of health. It's something that you know, we all have this sexual system and we have the ability to actually promote longevity and wellness in that system. We have all these different tools, both preventative and things that we can use for treatment that people don't know about. But I think that if we're just willing to talk about it, like talk about the problems we're having, talk about, you know, what we try, what we haven't tried, you know, the fact that we're all struggling with aging in the same way, if we can talk about it, then we can actually, I think, start to make bigger movements and changes in this space, which I think are really important and necessary.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And it's still, you know, it's a little bit of a taboo subject, and I'm going to have to put some disclaimers at the beginning of the show and explicits and all that stuff, because some people want to hear it, some people don't want to hear it. And they're just like, they live in that world where it's just, you know, out of mind, out of state, out of mind, I'll deal with it when I need to. But I think you and I take the proactive approach, and we're always looking to optimize. I guess that reminds me of one other question here. Are guys or men or women coming to see you who don't have a problem but want to take it to the next level? And what are those options? Because then I'm going to come see you.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say probably a good 30%, maybe 40% or even more of my patients don't really have any major problems to start with. I get a lot of this sort of biohacker health optimization crowd that comes in that are looking to just kind of generally, you know, try to improve systems, you know, whether that's skin, hair, sex, joints. We do a lot of joint injections and things as well in my office. But, you know, they don't have problems, but there's this idea that maybe by doing some of these regenerative therapies or shockwave therapy or lasers or, you know, hormones or some of these things, that we can maybe prevent some of the degradation of the systems, the tissue as we get older, and potentially turn the clock back a little bit as well and improve function now. So, but yeah. Short answer, yes.
Yeah. I need to make an appointment because I'm kind of getting that point too as well. I mean, I'm going to be turning 46 in a couple months. So, but you know, I feel better than I ever have, more vibrant. Man, 20 years ago, this was a totally different situation for me. So I'm excited for all the different therapies out there. People should know that there are options other than, you know, surgeries and penis implants and, you know, scalpels and sutures. And there's a lot of non-invasive techniques, which you're doing and which I do as well, which can transform lives. So thank you for everything that you're doing. If people want to learn more about you or what you're doing and they want to see you, where can they go to learn more?
So I'm very active on Instagram. That's actually like one of my main ways of communicating and teaching. It's a Dr. Amy B. Killen on Instagram. And I also have a YouTube channel. And then my website is dramykillen.com. That's one of my websites. You can find my other websites by going to that one first. And those are probably the easiest things to start with.
Yeah. And so you are in Utah, but you also go over to Dr. Adelson's clinic in Colorado. Is that right?
No, he's in Utah too. So he's in Park City. I have two offices, both in Utah, Park City and Salt Lake City areas.
Got it. All right. Well, this has been fun. We're going to have to do some more of this later. I can always keep going about sex and all of our, we can keep diving into the commonalities that we have. It's pretty cool. I'm excited. So Amy, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for sharing all this amazing stuff. We're going to have to get together once this kind of settles down at one of these. I'm sure I'll see you at some of these biohacker events anyway. So yeah, this is great.
Definitely. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks. So much fun. I can see how you need to have a personality like hers to do the very sensitive treatments comfortably and successfully. What did you think? Did you like it? Did you hate it? Was it too much penis and vagina? I'd love to hear what your thoughts are about this show. You can reach out to me on my Instagram account at sleepbiohacker, where you can DM me or comment on the posts where I talk about this show and other shows as well too, especially if you're new to this show. I recommend you check out some previous episodes. One of the most popular ones recently was a show I did with Len May about endo-DNA, and we talk about the endocannabinoid system and how to hack your genetics to get a better cannabis experience, which was really, really cool. Just a quick reminder, if you are interested in working with me, please check out my website. It's viasleep.com, viasleep.com, and that's where you can get more information about what I do, some of the things we talked about in the show, work with me one-on-one to help optimize your sleep or get rid of the snoring or the apnea or the CPAP machine. I mean, the list goes on and on. And I'm here to work with all of you who are interested in taking your sleep to the next level. And a couple last resources here before we sign off. You can always check out my sleep tips and tricks and gadgets and all of the fun stuff I'm doing on my Instagram at Sleep Biohacker. I'm also in Clubhouse at Sleep Biohacker. If you are on that platform, it's pretty cool. We've had some great conversations, lots of knowledge being dropped left and right from a world of influencers and health coaches and experts in their field. So come connect with me on Clubhouse at Sleep Biohacker. And guess what, folks? That's a wrap. And that's it for now. And I do hope you have the best night ever. Talk to you all soon.
This broadcast is for informational purposes only. Statements and views expressed in this show are not medical advice. The show, including Dr. Jay Corsandi, the co-host, guest, and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of any information contained herein. Opinions of the guests are their own. We do not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests, nor do we make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. If you think you have a medical problem, please consult a licensed physician.